Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Oh, my aching joints. Live long enough and you'll know what joint pain is. We're born with a cushiony surface to our joints, but with age and use, it thins, causing discomfort and eventually extreme pain. Our grandparents accepted this fate, but aging baby boomers want to maintain an active lifestyle. For many, advances in orthopedic medicine can provide a second lease on life, especially those who undergo hip replacement surgery. According to the CDC, approximately 332,000 hip replacement surgeries are performed annually.
Minimally invasive techniques and new materials have revolutionized this procedure, which was first introduced in the U.S. nearly 45 years ago. Here with the latest on hip replacement is Dr. Seth Grinke, a surgeon and lecturer in the field of joint arthroplasty for 24 years, an associate professor in orthopedics at Upstate Medical University. Dr. Grinke also co-directs the joint replacement program at St. Joseph's Hospital in Syracuse. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Grinke.
Thank you.
When we say hip replacement, what actually is being replaced?
Well, the hip is a ball and socket joint. So there's different variations of the hip replacement. The most traditional is you replace the ball with a metal ball, and you replace the socket with a metal socket and a plastic liner. Now, there's many variations of that traditional hip replacement that have sort of evolved over time, and the one that is most commonly used, it's a slight variation, is called a surface replacement. And a surface replacement, instead of replacing the ball of the hip, you cover it with a new metal surface, almost like retreading a tire. It accomplishes the same thing, which is basically putting a new surface on a worn-out surface.
All right, so what's going on that worn-out surface that causes pain?
The surface, when you're young, is an incredibly advantageous mechanical system where your body lubricates this ball and socket joint in an incredibly efficient manner. But from an injury or from genetics, the surface of the joint, which is this very smooth cartilaginous surface, can get worn out over time. And what eventually happens is it gets completely worn out, and instead of a smooth gliding surface covering the ball and socket, it becomes bone on bone. And when bone articulates with bone, it hurts.
Who's most likely to need hip replacement?
You know, joint replacement in general is a result of arthritis. And arthritis is just a word that means the joint wears out. The most common causes of arthritis are genetics. In other words, your grandmother had it, your mother had it, and you're going to have it. But other common causes are trauma. You know, you get in an accident. It doesn't have to be a big accident. It could be a relatively minor accident that sort of accumulates injury over time. And then there's all sorts of variations on arthritis, the most common of which is rheumatoid arthritis. That's an arthritis where your body attacks the joint, mistaking it for a foreign body and causes arthritis. But so genetics, trauma, and then some weird diseases.
What age group are you performing these surgeries on?
You know, we used to only perform joint replacements on people really over the age of 70. But as the techniques and the materials, there's different materials that you use, have improved. There's people that are in their 20s that sometimes get them, all the way up to my oldest person was 96.
What new surgical techniques have been developed? You mentioned that they're using new materials, and I imagine there are other things that have been developed over the years since it was first done.
Well, the materials are one thing that makes it last longer, and then the techniques of doing it are some of the techniques have improved the speed of the recovery. The new materials are different forms of metal, like cobalt chrome and titanium, and then ceramic, and then plastic, but not plastic like a container that you would store food in, a high-density plastic that has very, very good longevity. On the surgical side of things, there's all different directions that you can go in to do the hip replacement. If you go in from the back, it's called posterior. If you go in from the side, it's called lateral. And if you go in from the front, it's called anterior. There's a feeling that depending on which direction you go in, you can have a faster recovery. And the most recent direction that seems to be consistent with this is the anterior approach, where you go basically in the front front of the hip, which is theoretically a more muscle-sparing approach. And by muscle-sparing, it allows you to get better quicker. There's some controversy in the orthopedic field whether this actually occurs. And everyone pretty much agrees that by 6 weeks, there's no difference. But during that first 2 to 4 weeks, the anterior approach might offer a faster recovery, which for some people, it's a big deal. Unfortunately, it's not an approach that can be used on everybody. If you're a very large person, it's hard to do. And if you're extremely muscular, it's a little bit harder to do. But the techniques are evolving. We're getting better and better at it. So it's something we're using quite frequently now, whereas 10 years ago, it was basically unheard of.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
We're talking to Dr. Seth Grinke, an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in joint replacement surgery at St. Joseph's Hospital in Syracuse. Today we're talking about hip replacement, advances that have been made. Let's talk about some very basic things. If we have people that are listening that have been told they might need this operation, just a couple of questions and your advice. Are there specialists who just perform joint replacement surgery? And in your opinion, what advice do you give someone who has hip pain? How will they know when it's really time to have it replaced?
Well, every single field that exists in medicine has evolved to what we call subspecialization, which means orthopedic surgeons used to treat the gamut of everything. But now there's a special person for hand. There's a special person for spine. And there are special people that just do joint replacements. That's their specialty. And if you need a joint replacement, it's probably best to pick someone who specializes in joint replacement and does a fairly significant volume, because volume lends itself to quality.
What do you consider volume? What would be a reasonable average? Would it be, how many surgeries of this kind per year?
I would say over 100.
A year. Okay.
A year.
Mm-hmm.
Is a relatively high-volume surgeon. And you want a high-volume hospital also. In other words, you don't want to go to a hospital that does 50 a year. You want to go to a hospital like St. Joe's that does almost 3,000 a year, because you can imagine the difference in effectiveness when you do a lot. And you want to go to the recommendation. I think the family practitioners are fairly savvy and educated on who the people are that do the specialized in joint replacements.
Is this...
As far as when you go to the doctor, when it hurts a lot.
Going through my own process, I can absolutely understand. You know when it's time to pursue surgery. And you also, you know, you may say, well, let's try physical therapy. But yes, you know when it's time. So you were talking about recovery and the different types of hip replacements. There is an acute phase when you're going to be in a lot of pain. And then there's a phase when you're working through it. And then eventually, you know, you will have incredible function and you'll wonder why you waited so long. How long is the recovery time compared to different types of other surgeries?
Well, there's different people, there's different surgeries, and there's different degrees of pathology, all of which contribute to the rapidity of recovery. You know, some people are just amazing. It's like nothing to them, and it doesn't matter what approach you use. They're just going to get better really quickly. And other people take a little longer, not because they don't have the effort. It's just that genetically it's a little bit harder. If somebody's really fit, they're faster. If somebody's a little bit out of shape and overweight, it may take them a little bit longer. Having said that, the argument of different approaches, and again, let me just point out at the beginning, this is controversial. There's a lot of people who think it doesn't matter. But the advantage, theoretically, of the anterior approach is that you get better quicker. And a sidelight to that is some of the other approaches demand that you have certain precautions as you're recovering. In other words, you can't move this way or that way. You may have to be a little bit careful about how much weight you put on initially. The anterior approach traditionally has no precaution. You can start with any movement and any amount of weight.
Now, you mentioned that bad hips may run in families. If your grandmother had bad hips and your mother had bad hips, you may. So the question is, if you're in your 30s, 40s, or 50s and it really hasn't started yet, is there anything that you can do in your daily life to help stave off that arthritis?
So I think if it truly is genetic, what you're staving off is the symptoms more than the process of happening. As we get more and more savvy about sort of gene manipulation and genetics, we may be able to control it in the future before it hits. But the way to stave off the symptoms, the way to stave off having to have something really interventional done is the fitter you are, the longer it's going to take to develop symptoms. So the joint may develop arthritis, but you don't feel it for a lot longer. So staying in shape, keeping your weight down, keeping your strength up are techniques to stave off the inevitability if it's a genetic situation.
We don't have much time because I want to ask you something about the organization you're involved with in a minute, Operation Walk Syracuse. But is there anything new and exciting on the horizon with hip replacement that's going to make the surgery just so much easier?
I think that if you took a surgeon who was doing hip replacements 10 years ago, and he had, you know, retired and hadn't really been exposed to the procedure and the materials, and brought them into the operating room now and showed them what we did, it would shock them. They'd be so surprised at how fast we do the surgery, how fast the patients are mobilized, and how quickly they get out of the hospital. So in 10 years, there's going to be incredible developments in terms of the rapidity of recovery. Our techniques are constantly evolving. The materials are evolving. Even a year from now, it'll be improved. And that's why it's important to sort of pick somebody who that's their thing, because they're up to date on the things that are actually going to work. They don't fall for every gimmick that's advertised, but on the other hand, if something legit comes up, they're going to do it.
Dr. Grinke, we have very little time left, but I know that you're very involved in Operation Walk Syracuse, and this past November 2013, you returned from Panama. Could you just quickly describe what the organization does and what you accomplished?
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you. Operation Walk is an organization that we started at St. Joe's 3 years ago, my brother, myself, and Kim Murray. It involves going to places around the world where medical care in the form of a joint replacement would be impossible, both from a skill level and a financial level, and then picking out the neediest people and then doing the joints on them. We've been to Nepal, and last year we went to Panama. We did 75 joint replacements in about 3 days, and we took 50 people. It is completely donation-motivated. No one gets any money. The organization itself, we don't have anybody that is paid. It's all a volunteer. Everybody takes their own time off. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that still aren't taken care of, but we're working on that.
We're going to have information on our website about Operation Walk Syracuse. Dr. Seth Grinke is an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in joint replacement surgery at St. Joseph's Hospital in Syracuse. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For more information on hip replacement and Dr. Grinke, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org.
On next week's show, we'll examine a looming crisis that will impact healthcare by the end of the decade, an impending shortage of doctors that coincides with the largest segment of baby boomers in their senior years. Plus, women who have good girlfriends in their later years may reap greater health benefits than married women who don't make girlfriends a priority. Find out why.
Thanks for spending this half hour with us. If you have any questions or comments about today's show, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on the WRVO website. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care. Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York.